welcome to the Witness History Podcast from the BBC World Service, with me, Kane Pierry. Today, we're going back to 1953, to what was then the Belgian Congo in Central Africa, where mixed-race children, known as métis, were forcibly taken from their homes by colonial rulers. This is the story of five women and their fight for justice.
Je me présente d'abord, je suis Marie-Josée Lochy.
My name is Marie-Josée Lochy. I am métis, mixed race. When they stole me from my mother, my home was very far away, over 600 kilometers from the Catholic Institute I was taken to. First, we traveled by truck, then by boat. We were in the boat for 3-4 days. I don't know if you can imagine what that would do to a 4-year-old child. Think of a child being dropped off at school for the first time. Except for us, we could no longer hope to see our mothers again.
That's Marie-Josée. She's now 76 years old. But the memory of being stolen from her family has never left her. From the late 1940s to the early 1950s, soldiers and officers enter villages like Marie-Josée's across present-day Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda and Burundi, searching for mixed-race children.
First, there was King Leopold II's personal regime of ruthless exploitation.
In 1885, King Leopold II of Belgium declared huge swathes of territory in Africa his personal property. In 1908, the Belgian government officially declared the land a colony of the state, exploiting its riches and people for decades. The state's policy was simple. Any child born to a European father was seen as abandoned by definition and deemed a threat to colonial rule. They believed young mixed-race men and women would grow up to revolt against the colony. Accompanied by soldiers and her mother, 4-year-old Marie-Josée is taken from her village of Kule and transported over 600 kilometres to a Catholic mission in Katende.
I felt lost. I was crying. I was abducted from my mother and dropped off among strangers who didn't even speak my language. We were from different ethnic groups. The only thing we had in common was that we were all mixed race. Stupidly, we didn't realize at the time that we had been segregated because we were métis. But we noticed that they didn't want to mix us with other local children. We would go to the local school, but afterwards, we had to come straight home. We weren't allowed to communicate with the other local children. The poor nuns weren't prepared to look after children. The state asked them to. They looked after us best they could. But conditions in Katende were difficult. The food was also very different. At home with my mother, I used to eat lots of rice, and here, they served us manioc. I had never eaten it before. I remember I used to sit in front of my plate and I would cry. There were over 20 children. We slept on little metal beds, all lined up in dormitories with a very thin mattress. The conditions were so bad that the poor nuns continuously wrote to ask for subsidies to better look after us. I remember the day we got real mattresses. It was a celebration. A good bed can change your life.
In the years Marie-Josée spent in Katende, she would meet 4 women she now calls her sisters. Once they were old enough to leave the nuns, the women began building their new lives.
With independence coming so suddenly after 80 years of Belgian rule, the Congolese are furiously divided.
In the 1960s, as their country gained independence, in a way, so did they. Some stayed in the newly emancipated Congo, but renewed conflict in the region pushed many to seek a new life in Belgium. Marie-Josée wrote to the Belgian embassy, explaining how she was the child of a Belgian man, but was refused both help and a Belgian passport. Marie-Josée ended up fleeing to France in 2002, where she began working as a nurse in a care home. She raised two sons and has five grandchildren, and kept in touch with her sisterhood. Little did she know, her life would soon take another dramatic turn.
One of our sisters, Monique, had the bravery to return to the institute where we grew up to check if there was any written proof of the time we had spent there. She rustled through drawers and found letters between the nuns and the government that proved that we had been put there by the state. The other four called me and I joined them in Belgium. We sat there looking through the papers, and what these documents showed us was that there wasn't any official reason that explained how or why we were taken. That's when we said we need to find someone who will listen to our story and can help us to find out why we went through this.
Savoir pourquoi on a vécu ça.
In 2021, the five women were put in touch with Michel Hirsch, a lawyer who helped them launch their legal case against the government of Belgium, accusing it of kidnapping and persecuting the women because of their racial identity.
The first trial, the judges hardly listened to our lawyers. We were offered a symbolic €1 and they said they'd erect a statue of us somewhere.
Their first attempt at justice failed. The judges said that too much time had passed since the alleged crimes were committed. This came as a blow to the sisters. But, determined not to give up, they appealed the court's verdict.
We couldn't accept such a response. It motivated us to push harder.
Ça nous a encore motivé plus que tout à tenir bon.
During the second trial, our lawyers gave it their all. That's when the judges started to understand that our story wasn't to be ignored.
On December 2nd, 2024, the five women were summoned to their lawyer's office.
We didn't know what to expect. I remember feeling really hot and nervous. We kept saying, what will be, will be. We've made it this far, whether we win or not.
Madame Hirsch reçoit un coup de téléphone.
That's when Madame Hirsch's phone rang and we were told we had won. We jumped around the room like crazy women. One of us had been operated on her knee, but she was jumping from joy. It was a miracle. A miracle.
A miracle.
Belgium was found guilty of crimes against humanity during colonial rule. A historic verdict, activists hope, will lead to further reparations. The court has ordered the state to pay all five women €50,000 as compensation. But for Marie-Josée, her sisters and her family, the money really doesn't matter.
Even after this historic ruling and such a long fight, we are wounded for life. We can never recover what we have lost, our youth, our childhood. Now we walk with our heads held high. What we once hid is now out there. The past was just too heavy to keep to ourselves. We now have proof that justice exists.
On a enfin compris que la justice existe.
Marie-Josée Lochy lives in the Somme region of France. She was speaking to me, Cain Pierry, for the Witness History podcast from the BBC World Service. If you found it interesting, please do give it a rating and a review. It really helps us reach people with these stories.
From the brilliant and bizarre.
It was really surreal. It was a surreal kind of atmosphere there. You couldn't really see anybody.
To the shocking and unexpected.
I'm just wondering, what are we going to do now? This was really my worst fear. He found 100% horse meat that was labelled as beef.
Witness the stories that have shaped our world, told by the people who were there.
When he went to the factory, the poodle went in front of him. So the workers only knew, oh, the boss is here.
Many people had many things to lose by our victory. The future was not so bright.
Witness history.
We had a designer. He brought in a fully storyboarded idea about how the Queen would arrive by jumping out of a helicopter. And we all said, that's brilliant, but it's never going to happen.
Witness history at bbcworldservice.com/witnesshistory or wherever you get your podcasts.